Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much, much more. This is episode 42, the answer to everything.
That is what I hear.
Did you, I mean, do you listen to the audiobook of it, or do you, was it?
I think I actually read it on my GP2X. I read Hitchhiker's Guide, the text file. Do you know what a GP2X is?
I do not know what a GP2X is.
It is, they make newer ones now. It's, I think it's the new one. The newer one is called the GP2 Wiz, but it's made in Korea. It's a little, it looks like a Game Boy Advance, and it runs Linux. So you can put in an SD card, and it'll load like all kinds of crazy ROMs and stuff.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's rad. I haven't tooled around with it in a long time, but I think when I read Hitchhiker's Guide, I read it on my GP2X. True story.
It was a Kindle Fire before there was a Kindle Fire.
It's true. Gave me eye strain.
But now you have those fancy computer glasses.
I do have fancy computer glasses.
And they won't give you eye strain anymore.
They give me much less.
See?
I did talk about that. I checked in with them, didn't I?
You did.
That I look at the computer so much, I need goggles so my eyes don't melt.
You're from the future!
I'm from the world of tomorrow!
Exactly. With your computer glasses.
Did you like that?
It was good.
I look like that guy with those glasses.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I can see it. You just need to get a lab coat, honestly, that's it.
I do need a lab coat. I don't have his hair.
Yeah.
He does have nerd glasses.
He does.
And so do I. They're extra nerd glasses because they're only for the computer.
Yeah. That is an extra level of nerdery.
Yes. The next step is to get glasses that are only for D&D.
These glasses are only for when I look at computers.
Thank you. You sound like someone that's... What is that voice? You sound like an extra from Napoleon Dynamite.
I don't know. I was just going to one of my default nerd voices.
Yes.
Okay, and I think it's time for checking in. Eric, what do you got? The checking is a segment where we discuss what we've been looking, seeing, doing stuff.
Touching, feeling.
Verbs.
Yes.
Adverbs, too. We're not excluding adverbs. But Eric, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to?
Yes.
I finally finished Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. And I wanted to share my favorite Steve Jobs anecdote from the book.
Okay.
The whole second half of it is really very tragic because Steve Jobs is an idiot and basically killed himself by not taking care of his cancer when it was treatable. I mean, it's all terribly sad, but you're kind of like, what is wrong with you, Steve? Why he just... would basically pretend that nothing applied to him, that no rules applied to him. Like, hey, you've got cancer. You should go to the doctor. He's like, I'm going to treat it with vegetables because that works.
I don't think it does, actually.
No, you cannot kill cancer with fruit.
Double do not buy on killing cancer with fruit.
Yes, double do not buy. But, well... there came to a point where Steve was just getting, he was going in and out of remission on the cancer, getting very sick. He was becoming emaciated. He couldn't eat. He had had a lot of his pancreas taken out and had a new liver. I was going to say installed, but we'll go with installed. He had a new liver installed. He's a computer guy.
Yes, it works.
He had a new liver installed.
Did he get the driver updated?
That was his problem. He needed his drivers updated.
Oh, okay.
Motherfucker needed some new firmware. It's like a nerd pickup line. Oh, yeah, I'll give you a firmware update, baby. Do you like that?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, ooh. Firmware update.
Ooh, yeah.
That's terrible. Get out of here, Macho Man.
I'm out!
Go back to your attic. Good God, let me tell my story. So the poor guy is in the hospital, and he's, like, drugged. He's, like, he's going in and out of consciousness, and his nurse comes in, puts, like, an oxygen mask on him, and he rips it off, and he gets angry at the nurse, and he's like, no, you can't give me this mask. I hate the design. And he tells her, bring me 4 or 5 options, and we'll discuss the masks.
He's a fucking psychopath.
Yes. I mean, I think he was really high when he said that.
Yeah, I would assume.
But, damn.
We'll discuss. This doesn't have white rounded edges. How can I use this oxygen mask?
Rounded rectangles, man. Rounded rectangles.
I know.
The man was crazy for rounded rectangles.
He loved them.
And cubes. Oh my God. The motherfucker loved cubes. He nearly ran two companies into the ground because he loved cubes so much. Anyway, oh my God, Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. I really enjoy. It's all such recent history, but it's all incredibly fascinating. The history of technology. It only goes back. I mean, if you go back 50 years, you're talking about like proto computers. It's like incredible stuff. But the history, like the Steve Jobs autobiography, was absolutely incredible. I will probably have to even read it again at some point, but oh my God, what a nut. What a nut. You think you'll ever pick it up?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm not.
You're kind of an Apple guy.
Yeah, I am kind of.
I think it's interesting that you have an iPad and an iPhone and no Macintoshes.
Well, I have one now.
Yes, but you didn't buy it.
I did not buy it.
Anyway, I believe you're also familiar with the next thing I'm going to check in with, which is, yes, it is your mom. No, it is An Idiot Abroad.
Excellent program.
I am really liking it. I've watched the first season. Carl is just the most adorable little man. I mean, there is something just heartwarming about the way he sees the world. Because, I honestly don't know if I'd go as far to say he's an idiot, but he definitely says some dumbass shit.
He does.
And then he'll say something that's, like, really kind of profound. It's, like, weird how he oscillates from being, like, you know, like a working-class philosopher and a complete buffoon. I don't know. I think it's really, really pretty exemplary. It's kind of unreal how likable he is.
Well, I think they put it best in the intro. Mm-hmm. He's like a real life Homer Simpson.
He kind of is. Like he's not like a big lard ass like Homer, but he is a simple guy. And I think it's interesting to see, because I just started season 2, that he seems to actually have changed a little bit. He's not as small-minded as he was, but he's still very much Carl. He's Carl to the bone.
Have you ever listened to their podcasts or
Well, you showed me a couple of them ages ago on your HBO Go.
Yeah, they animated them for HBO, and those are excellent, too.
They were... I should probably just go back and listen to all of them, because the one where he told him the parable or the story about the liar at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was... I wish I could remember what he said, but it was like... It was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard, and it was complete genius. It was amazing. Carl is the kind of person that you cannot believe exists. It's unreal. I don't know. After watching the show, like, I kind of didn't understand like why he hung out with Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant so much, mm-hmm. why he put up with their shit, or why they even liked him. But I kind of understand it now. Like, I don't know. He's just very likable. He's got sort of an amazing quality to him. It's indefinable. So I assume you did nothing all week.
No, I actually did do things.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You don't tell me about them, though.
Don't?
Oh, wait, no, do. That's what you're supposed to do now.
I'm supposed to do. Okay, good. The first thing I want to check in with is The Wind Rises by Studio Ghibli Film, the quote-unquote last film of Miyazaki.
The farewell tour.
Even though he technically is unretired since he announced that he was retiring after mm-hmm. this film, so mm-hmm. who knows if he's actually going to make another film or not. I know he's still drawing manga.
God, I love that man. We need to get him some cyborg eyeballs.
How old is he? He's in his 70s, isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, really, for an artist, that's not that old. Artists can be making stuff into their like their mid-80s.
I know.
And still just, be crushing it.
I know. I mean, the film is good.
It's not his best.
No, I definitely wouldn't put it up there with any of my favorites.
Where did you see it?
Theater in North Miami.
Okay, very cool.
In the Richie Rich Mall, one of the like three Richie Rich malls in our area.
Are there any places in more central Florida that you would see this kind of stuff? I've never looked into.
Orlando has the Enzian. And I'm mm-hmm. sure Enzian was playing it, or it will play it. I know Tampa, maybe the Tampa Theater, or one of the one of the art house theaters.
Right.
You might catch it there.
Was it in English when you saw it at the theater?
Yeah, yeah. As Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays the main character. The plot is like a lot of Miyazaki films. It's kind of not necessarily like very stream. I mean, it's just kind of aimless. It just kind of, you wander through this guy's life, and there's never necessarily an end, kind of a middle, beginning, middle, end plot structure. It's really just following this famous aircraft designer through his life. He's the guy who developed the Zero fighter jet for Japan in World War II.
He didn't develop it for New Zealand.
No, he did not. And Miyazaki apparently idolizes this guy, and loves airplanes.
Yes, he has always been kind of gay for airplanes.
Yeah, and you follow this guy, you know, around, and it's definitely not nearly as fantastical as a lot of Studio Ghibli films. The only kind of strange parts of the film are he has dream sequences where he talks. He has this like conversations with this famous Italian aircraft designer who is like a peer or an idol of his that he looks up to. But other than that, it's basically just following him through his life as he, you know, his ups and downs as he's, you know, trying to design planes, get hired and all that stuff. I know that it's been criticized a lot for not showing like the horrors of war and he's designing these planes, and you know they do go in depth about how he wants to just make beautiful aircraft. He doesn't want to kill people, and like the Italian designer in one of his dreams, he goes, "Would you like rather have a world with the pyramids or without the pyramids?" And that's the metaphor, I guess, for it is, you know, the pyramids are these amazing items, these amazing artifacts, you know, gigantic objects. And yet, you know, thousands of people died creating them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Italian's like, I want a world with pyramids. So that's the, I guess, the crux of that argument. It does show some, the kind of the drawbacks to, you know, that he's designing all these aircraft. None of them return. They all get destroyed. And you do see some of that horrific imagery, you know, with things getting, you know, war and stuff. A lot of it is just his life. And it's entertaining. I'd see it again. It's a lot better than the last one, his last film, which is From Up on Poppy Hill. I didn't really like that one that much. This one is better than that. I would definitely see it again. A little, like a lot of Studio Ghibli films and Miyazaki films, it's a little times overly earnest.
Yes.
But other than that, it's solid.
Well, I have something to tell you.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to get a job at Lockheed Martin. I just want to design beautiful missiles.
Is that it? Just beautiful missiles?
Yeah, Steve. Steve doesn't like the design, though. He wants to see some options.
Rounded rectangle missiles?
Yes, they're perfect cubes.
Does this seem like a very...
it's not very aerodynamic, no, but it doesn't matter.
Plows through the air.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter. It's like all about the aesthetic, and it's got to look beautiful on the inside.
It's like a Borg cube. It just kind of
yes
moves.
Yes, it just propels. It imputes.
The other thing I want to check in with is something Eric's mentioned before on the podcast, I believe, but it was a long time ago.
I don't know if I did mention it.
I thought you did, like a single-digit episode.
I believe we probably talked about it, but I've never listened to it. I know it because I know what you're going to say. So go ahead, I'll let you tell it.
Okay. Well, Eric had, at least, I swear it was on the podcast, but we...
This is the person, the other person you podcast with.
I guess so. It's Nerd Poker podcast. It's Brian Posehn, the comedian, and he basically just plays D&D with his buddies, who he's played for a decade, they say in the intro, and... They just kind of start a new session, start a new adventure, and start new characters, and go with their DM and, you know, all their friends, just kind of recording their adventures and making cracking jokes, and you're kind of like just sitting in the room with them.
Any famous names that you can think of in that podcast other than Posehn?
Well, there's Gary Duggan, who writes Deadpool with him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a comic connection. There's a comedian called Blaine Cabbage, I think is his name.
Blaine Capatch is his name.
Capatch, okay. Blaine Capatch. He's Capatch.
Capatch is the skinniest man I've ever seen.
That's what they make jokes about it a lot.
I'm sure they do. He's really skinny.
In the span of the episodes I've listened to, he's had a child, and apparently he tweeted out that the child already weighs more than him. The baby carries him around now.
Yeah, there you go.
But their DM is a guy who writes for Machinima.
Okay. I should know that guy's name.
His name is Sark, is his DM, his actual name is, I forget.
His nerd name, is that what you were going to say?
It is what I was going to say.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
That's good.
They call him Sark. Everyone else is are just friends, but they're very funny, and everyone in the show is enjoyable to listen to. They have had Patton Oswalt on in a couple episodes because they've done like little tales from adventures past. And at one point, Patton Oswalt, they apparently used to play with them back in the day before they all had kids, and he would write songs about their adventures. So he came in and wrote a new song for all the new characters and sang it, and it was hilarious. As you would expect. Apparently Chris Hardwick used to play with him as well.
Yes, he did. That's kind of what I was... Oh, man. That's kind of what I was hoping that some of the more comedian friends were part of it. Patton Oswalt doesn't play with him anymore, but he talked about how he used to play a character called Stumphammer.
Yes.
It was with Hardwick and Brian Posehn.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me think about because I read Zombie Spaceship Wasteland a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really great part where he described one of his characters who was this just deplorable human being that was Ulvac the Fighter. And he had, like, he was, he had, like, all of his high roles were in, like his strength and his constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, like, a 3 charisma.
Mm.
So he was, like, a horrible person and hated everyone. And was, like, horribly scarred and marred and looked like a monster. And it was just, like, I don't, he said it was, like, this weird, like, teenage angst of, like, wanting to go around and kill and rape everything. I don't know. It was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, Posehn plays kind of that character
mm-hmm.
In this series. Kind of just a big numbskull that kills everything. At one point, he breaks some poor innocent girl's neck before anyone, like, it doesn't even, he just goes, I break her neck. And he's like, is that okay?
Why not? What I else know. Are you going
to
do?
Exactly. I've listened to like 40 episodes almost. They're about an hour long each.
Good Lord.
It's a lot of fun. It's made me want to play D&D, which we're going to do soon.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard we're going to do D&D. I think we need to, have you guys been talking about concepts?
No, I was just going to, like, broach the subject when we're all together.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. I do think we need to come up with something crazy.
That's up to you guys.
I'm all for the game being like a Saturday morning cartoon. I think that would be amazing. I really love the idea. I don't know if I can sell it to everyone. You already seem reticent.
I just don't want to control anything. I understand, but I don't want to.
That
I
is exactly
put reins
what you're
on
supposed
you.
To do.
I don't want
to
put reins on you. I want to let you flow wild and free.
You're just supposed to talk us into splitting up the party and killing ourselves. That's your job.
I just want to see spectacular things happen.
Well, just so you know, I hate the design. I want some options.
But Nerd Poker definitely suggests it's a lot of fun. I've been whittling away my work hours with it. But I think that is it for checking in.
It's pretty well checked in.
We're sufficiently checked in.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you say it like that.
Yeah. And you know what time it is now, Eric?
Golly gosh, what time is it, mister?
It's the floppiest part of the week. It is time for weekly floppies.
I like how you broke that up there. It's like it dragged it out even longer.
Break it down.
You are a silly goose.
Yeah, I am. Weekly floppies is part of the show where we look at the books of the week, you know, a handful of them, and tell you what you should buy and do not buy. And you should listen to us.
You probably should, because when we say don't buy, it's terrible.
Yeah, generally is. We're pretty nice, honestly.
We could be a lot meaner. I kind of operate under the assumption that, hey, I'm a professional artist, and if I'm going to talk shit about someone, I'm going to be clear if they're really fucking it up, but I don't know. I'm not just going to be like, this person's an idiot. Like Rob Liefeld, like I think that the man is a bad artist, and even that's a really mean ass thing to say, but I'm not embarrassed to say it. I clearly feel like he is a bad and lazy artist, and I will say that, but there's no doubt that the man has a large body of work and somehow has found an audience that loves him. So, I mean, there's only so much that you can say negative about that.
I enjoy Rob the person. I do not enjoy the Rob the artist.
So it goes.
Yeah. We're going to start off with Marvel this week. Fantastic Four, number one, reboot. Written by James Robinson, art by Leonard Kirk, Carl Kessel on, was it, inks. And Jesus Abertov on colors. Letters by Clayton Cowles. This is, it doesn't seem that long ago. They just ended the last Fantastic Four run with Matt Fraction, and now they're rebooting it with James Robinson, who has recently come over. He's been writing the Invader series that neither of us like. I like this more than that.
Which one was it? Invaders?
The Invaders. One with Cap and then the original Human Torch. And then yes. Alien Lady.
Yes.
Yeah, we were kind of meh on it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this.
I didn't, like, want to kill myself while I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's just got so many elements of the, you know, the FF and all the top notch books that we just did for Nerd Boy Book Club.
Mm-hmm.
That it's kind of disappointing. You know, it's like seeing these characters. It's like season 3 of The Sopranos or something. You know, it's like taken over by another writer, and it just doesn't feel the same. And it's just a letdown to me. Like, I dislike this Reed Richards completely.
You don't like him?
No, I don't care for him at all. I do like that Ben Grimm punches Fing Fang Foom with a Mortal Kombat uppercut, even.
Yeah, he does.
I also like that he and Fing Fang Foom are wearing the same shorts. I don't know, the Dragon and Monster Bicycle Short Shop. They both shop at.
That's, I mean, in the Marvel Universe, that place does crazy business.
Clearly. I hope to see some options on those shorts designs, Robbie. I'm having fun with it.
Okay, you're just going to keep doing that.
It's called a callback.
Yeah, I know. Do you like the red costumes in this?
They're okay. I like the white ones way more.
Yeah, me too.
It's competent, but I just kind of don't like the feel of it. I honestly, unless the next couple of books really picked up, I don't know that I really care for it. And I don't know what the hell it is with Johnny Storm being like this friggin' American Idol. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That is so dumb.
Yeah, I'm just going to that whole kind of thing at the beginning with Sue writing this, you know, sad letter about how they've fallen apart.
Right.
Does that doesn't raise any intrigue with you?
It does. It's interesting. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? But I also kind of don't want to read about a Fantastic Four with that level of problems. You know, I want to see them, like, go through hard times and deal with things, but I don't want to see the family not getting along. It's kind of it's kind of the identity crisis moment for the Fantastic Four. Do you know what I mean? I don't think I'm articulating it very well.
I think I understand where you're going.
It's like it's a little bit not appropriate, but I think maybe it's just a tease.
Yeah, you know? I feel like my first thought was like, this is like some kind of swerve.
Yes,
I don't think that this is actually. I don't know what exactly it's like trying to deflect attention from, but I don't think that this seems like a big fake out for something. I don't know how it's gonna work, but it still has me intrigued. Even that makes me more interested than the fall of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
the fact that it's. I think it's going somewhere that's not that is more interesting to me than just another standard team falling apart book.
Right.
So I really like the art. I really, I was not familiar with this artist at all, but I really enjoyed it.
I think there are some pages that are handled really tremendously well. I think it's more just personally. I think he draws the monsters really well. I think the background art is really, really rich and full. It's got you get a nice sense of, you know, a real rich world. I just kind of don't care for the way that Reed and Sue in particular are done. I think the monsters and the thing are look really great.
Yeah, I was about to say that opening, you know, double page with Fin Fang Foom and all that looks really cool.
Fin Fang Foom is a weird call, don't you think?
It's clearly a callback to, you know, the very original, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Oh yes.
Thing where, you know, that it's supposed to bring back that nostalgic feeling of, you know, of the Fantastic Four from that era.
Mm-hmm.
Facing Fin Fang Foom, it's calling back to that. I mean, obviously, in the better days, I think it's supposed to bring that feeling back.
Yes.
But I'm a buy. I this has sufficiently intrigued me that I would read two or three more issues to see where it goes.
I don't hate the idea of exploring this more, but I honestly, there's not enough here to really to say I can recommend it. So I'm a do not buy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Split decision there.
Split decision.
Uh-oh.
It's been a while, be honest. We've been pretty unanimous on almost everything, whether it's buy or do not buy.
Yeah, it's true. Second Marvel book is Uncanny Avengers, number 17. I think my voice just cracked a little bit. I'm hitting puberty for a second time.
You want to do it again?
No, I like it.
You like it?
I like it being a little...
Okay.
I'm human. I can't help it.
Well, whatever, man.
Whatever, man. This is written by Rick Remender, art by Steve McNiven, Jay Leiston on inks, Laura Martin with Ponzer, Mila, and Molinar on colors, Clayton Cowles doing the letters. Again, another Clayton Cowles letter book. Exodar the Executioner is about to fucking kill Earth, and Thor's trying to stop him. And he fails. We all are dead.
Yeah, this book makes me angry.
Does it?
Yes. What the fucking fuck?
I like it.
I'm really annoyed that that's the point that this book ends at. Like, is that a cliffhanger? That's dumb.
Well, if you do recall, all the mutants got teleported off. They're in that ship. Kang is involved, who time travels. So
I mean, clearly this is not the end.
Yes,
of the Marvel universe.
End of the Marvel universe. Shut it down.
Yeah, they're just going to close. Like, we're done with these comics.
The last Marvel story.
Yes, I mean, comic books. I hate the design anyway.
I hate you. No, but I fully expected them to win.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and I like that. I like that it plays with my ideas and how I feel, you know, this is going to go.
This wouldn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more bothered by the fact I have to wait to see how this is resolved. And exactly like you said, like, you kind of... No, it can't end on this note. It's not that shocking to see this.
It's not that it's shocking. It's that it's not what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting them to stop Exodar.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. They failed. You see Cap fucking gutted.
Yeah, and it's good that they're surprising us with this, but I feel like it's in a relatively cheap sort of way.
Mm.
You know, like it's shock value, and it's all going to fall down to, it was all a dream, you know, at the end. Like, they're going to magic it away. None of it ever happened.
Well,
is it really going to be any different than that? Do you really foresee it going any differently?
Well, I expect time travel to be prominently involved, of course.
I would imagine.
I don't think, yes. Do I expect Captain America to stay dead? No, but I don't think that it's... I think it's going to be used as a storyteller. It, you know, has its weight in the story and mm-hmm. add all that to what happens in the end. I have faith in Rick Remender to make it, you know, all this gravitas to actually mean something.
Yes.
And the art looks gorgeous.
Well, he's the best at what he does.
That page with, like, little Uatu.
Little Uatu.
As Exodar explodes the Earth from inside.
Yeah. It was pretty special.
I really like it. And Score with the burn-up. Throw with his burn-up arm.
Mm-hmm. His beef jerky arm.
Beef jerky arm. Matches Cap's beef jerky face.
Yeah, good God, it's gross.
Cap's a warrior. He don't stop.
No, he's keeps on rolling. It's whatever. I can get a new face. Oh, man, there's a scythe in my gut.
I'm not sure he
that
can.
That sucks.
Not sure he can recover from that.
I'm going to take a blood nap.
I'm a bi. This is a series is one of my favorites, and I am not wavering. I am ready for more.
I'm not going to say I... It seems really dumb. If you've read any of the other ones, you should buy this. If you've not read any of the other ones,
no,
you should buy them and this.
Yes.
Because they're a whole hell of a lot of fun. I'm a little disgruntled about this episode, this issue. I just kind of wish that this was the next to the last chapter in a trade and I didn't have to wait for the next one. That's my only gripe. Other than that, this is a good and interesting book for all the reasons we've discussed. I just am a little grumbly about it. So I'm a buy.
Double buy!
There we go.
There we go. Moving on to DC. Flash, number 28. Written by Brian Buccitello. Art by Patrick Zercher. Matt Hollingsworth on colors. Carlos M. Mangual doing the letters. And the cover is fucking awful again. We had read the last issue of this, and I thought, you know, let's check in. We thought it was, you know, we were optimistic about it. I like this issue more than the last one. Even though it is kind of aping the plot from a couple movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
Fallen and The Frighteners. Kind of a mix between those two stories. We see the Flash possessed and then teaming up with Deadman to track down this like ghost serial killer who possesses people's bodies to try and settle this blood feud. Do you like it, Eric?
I do. I have the same gripes with it as I did the last issue, in that it's just a weird, weird concept. Like, I could understand reading a Batman story about solving crimes like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's very part of Batman's canon. But it's a weird thing to reinvent the Flash this way. I don't dislike these stories, and I like the idea of superhero detectives.
Mm-hmm. Like, but the Flash isn't that to you.
No, he is a goofy showboat or something like that. You know, he's not this. It's not bad. It just feels so incongruous, so strange. It just kind of doesn't fit together. I mean, as far as comics trying to fit this mold DC's trying to create of this more human side of superheroes,
mm-hmm,
combined with, I'm not exactly sure what they're going for, but I think this, for that weird ass formula, somehow works better. But at the same time, it's nonsense. It's so weird. It really doesn't feel like the artists and the creators are making the decisions. It feels like someone that's an executive at DC is like, well, Batman works because it's this scenario, so let's make it more like that. Let's make everything like that.
Well, Batman comics routinely are the best sellers.
Yeah.
And that's what they're interested in.
Exactly. Well, I mean, yes, but it's just senseless. But at least this one, as bad as the round peg square hole scenario is, they're pulling it off relatively well.
I liked it. I also liked it when I saw Fallen, or when I saw The Frighteners, which, mm-hmm, this borrows from heavily, the plot devices.
Right.
But it's still good and a very solid book. I like the art, which I generally, you know, don't like a lot of DC artists, but...
No, this is strong art. This guy should also be doing his own covers. Because
yeah.
I agree with you that this is not a great cover. It looks like the same artist as the last book.
Yes, it is, I think.
But it is not a strong concept. It is actually a very dumb cover.
It looks like he drew it in like 5 minutes, where it does not look finished.
It does look really rushed. I mean, any interior page in this book looks far richer.
It does.
And I can't imagine the mismatch here, the management of them saying, well, here's this really lush interior, this detective story. Let's get a book that looks like, you know, a cover that's drawn by this guy. I mean, it's like it's for kids, the cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a mismatch, and it just seems so badly managed, so poorly thought through.
I don't understand why. I mean, this is rated T for teen. This is not a children's book. I mean, there's murders and stuff in it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. They're not selling this book very well with this cover.
I completely agree. And if I were the artist and also probably the writer of this, I would be kind of annoyed that my book was coming out with those covers. I don't know that it's particularly the artist's fault. It could just be that they don't get on with the team, that he's not getting good direction, that he doesn't care about drawing this book. He just seems like a complete mismatch for it. Or he is unprofessional and not really doing his job and making a cover that would sell a damn book.
Yeah.
Something is wrong here.
Yeah. But aside from the cover, art is very, very nice.
Yeah, the interiors are gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm a buy on this. This book has moved me over to the solid, confident, you know, buy, good book, Flash 28.
I could still teeter over into do not buy at any moment, but this is still good. You know, it's worth reading. I think it's worth buying on the art alone. This is tremendous.
You heard it here, folks. Double buy.
God. You.
I'm goofball?
Oh, you.
Yeah, I know. Next up, we are reading Teen Titans, number 28. We have not read a Teen Titans before. I'm continuing our string of DC books we haven't read before.
I hope we never read one again.
Eric's getting a little ahead of me. Written by Scott Lobdell. Breakdowns, quote unquote, by Scott McDaniel. Pencils by Tyler Kirkham. Inks by Art Tibbert. Letters by Travis Lanham. This, we see the Titans have been transported to the future by the crime syndicate to conveniently get them out of the way. And the Kid Flash is, you know, there's some court thing happening, and he's like a war criminal, and now there's a giant fight, and his, I don't know, you know, Superboy's an asshole, and
this book doesn't make any sense to me. It's like it is a weird friggin' anomaly. Like, do you know what it makes me think of is, like, the worst of the worst. Like, I kept thinking of it, and I don't know why. I think it's more just a demographic thing than anything. The worst of the worst, like 90s Gen 13 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't particularly hate Gen 13, but it was very much a product of that time and very much written for dumb teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And this book feels like that. Like everything is hitting you over the head, obvious, and it's, I don't know, it tries to act more grown up than it is.
Well, you know who the writer is.
Who is the writer?
Scott Lobdell. Professional comic book writer, Scott Lobdell.
Who the shit is that?
He's Bob Harris, who's the one of the editors of DC. He they when they worked at Marvel together in the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
making terrible comics.
Mm-hmm.
And now they continue that trend in DC.
Clearly so, because that's what this feels like.
Yeah, it's not very good.
And no, it's terrible.
They're canceling it in a couple issues, I think. But
well, I wonder why.
It's amazing it lasted this long, because this has the rep of being one of the worst books in DC, and
it is super bad. I think it's weird, like how the cover looks like this dude like getting caught, like getting a blowjob in a thunderstorm. Are you looking at the cover?
I am looking at the cover.
Do you agree that's what looks like what's going on there?
I don't know what's happening.
I mean, seriously, if someone is trying to not make that look like really unnecessarily sexual, I don't know. They have, I don't want to say problems, but they're bottling some stuff up.
This Superboy, who's apparently the son of Superman and Lois Lane, like, he straight up murders, like, four guys in the first page.
Throws them into a sun.
Yeah, they're dead. Like, they're burnt to their death.
They go toast when they die.
I think it's more like, tss.
Yeah, I like to think that it's toast.
And then there's a Foom, so Fin Fang Foom's present, too. He breathes fire on the Superman. He
clearly is. And then this Wonder Woman chick, I assume. Who is she?
I don't know.
Well, I love how she gets tied up with, but the lasso like perfectly frames her boobs.
Of course.
So we can we have this plot device of her getting tied up and helpless, and we get to do some ogling. So it's like a two for one. Jesus Christ, this book is special.
I don't understand the plot, like the character consistency is, characters are totally inconsistent even within this one issue. Like this mm-hmm. girl, this light based character, this is his love interest.
Yes.
Wants to be with him, but then stops him early on, but then later on commits murder to be with him.
Yeah, everything that happens in this, it's like, it feels like every time you turn the page, the only metaphor I can think of is it's like being in an ant farm,
mm-hmm.
and every time you turn the page, there's like some kid outside that flips the ant farm upside down. It's just, the whole world fucking changes, and something completely out of left field happens on like every page reveal. It's insane and senseless.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I'm do not buy, if it's not clear.
Well, I hate the design. I'd like to see some options.
You'd like to see some options?
No, I would like to see no options on this. I would like to see this book and all the people responsible to just be burned alive.
They'll be fired.
They will be fired.
Out of a cannon into the sun.
Into the sun. And they'll go toast.
That's Teen Titans number 28. Double do not buy.
Solid do not fucking buy this book.
It's pretty bad.
I'm angry that
suspicions that confirmed. Experience.
Yes.
Lastly, I had to call an audible on this one because the first book I picked wasn't available on Comixology for some reason. But last book of the week, our indie book, is Deadly Class, number 2, written by Rick Remender, Wes Craig doing the art, Lee Loughridge doing colors, and Russ Wooten with letters plus design.
What were you saying? Did you say audible?
I had to call an audible.
Call an audible.
Football term.
That's I'm gonna say I don't know what you're talking about.
I
don't know. I don't know about the foosball.
It's when you start a play,
mm-hmm.
and the quarterback will see the defense is prepared for it, so he wants to change it. So he calls an audible. He yells a sequence of words which everyone on the offense understands, meaning something. So they change the play. They'll change their lineup. They'll move players around, and then do a different play so that the defense is unprepared.
Makes perfect sense.
And I had to change our reading schedule on the fly because I wanted to read Revenge number 1, which had come out this week. I could not, it's not on Comixology for some reason.
Well, but, I'm glad you've explained it to me like I'm 5.
Well,
just the way that Teen Titans explains things to me.
Exactly. Yeah, like I said, this is, I got finished credits. This book is in like 1980s books. It's set in 1980s with an orphan in like the school for assassins kind of thing, which I read we didn't read this first issue because I thought it sounded, the premise kind of sounded meh. Like, I've read stuff like that before. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's cool for assassins. Set in, like, 30 years ago. And I'm like, But then I'm like, the first issue is really good. It's very well executed. And this book confirmed I really, really like this. I really like it a lot. Eric, I'm very curious if you like it or not.
I started off not terribly enjoying it. But it is pretty well executed. Do you know... It's like a grisly Harry Potter.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's a lot. Like, the fact that they have all these different classes, like friggin' potions and fortune telling and what the hell ever.
Hand-to-hand combat. And
yeah, their class is getting beat up by Asian men.
101.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that feel mixed in with, like, they even mention John Hughes in this, and it...
Yes.
It feels like that as well. John Hughes movie with, like, the cliques and, you know.
I think it's also weird that all the gangs are, like, they're, like, prison gangs.
Yeah, I was about to say, it is very much.
And it kind of bothers me that, like, the Southern people are, like, the fucking Aryan Brotherhood. It's like, fuck you. But at the same time, it's really genius. Because high school is exactly like prison.
It is.
I don't know why people look back on it fondly.
Certainly don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool to be young and stupid. Like, it's pretty awesome. But, holy fuck, it was like being in prison. Exactly like being in prison. And I think the place that it's very clear is when this kid's getting beat up in the showers.
Yes.
That is a fucking, like, this is like a prison drama. This is amazing. But it's about kids.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Kids being trained to be assassins.
It's kind of trying to do too much when you put that back into it. But it is interesting. It is nothing if not interesting.
I really like the art.
Pretty fascinating. Yeah, the art is fun, isn't it?
It reminds me of Paul Pope. A little bit.
Yeah, it's Popey.
I was kept thinking Battling Boy a lot when I was watching it, looking at it.
It's got that brush strokey stuff. Like, I don't think it's quite as rich as that, but it's still good. So I'm kind of curious, the Smoking Misfits, they seem to be like the Breakfast Club group. Mm-hmm. That they're like one group from all the different tribes.
Yeah.
You know, sitting up being the outsiders. I don't know. It's weird. And it's particularly that they're having an angry conversation about John Hughes when it's clearly borrowing from that. I don't know. It's so effing meta.
I think that's the intention. Like, it's supposed to be.
I'm sure it is. But it's like, whoa. What? Weird.
This and of all the like ideas of all the Rick Remender, I like Rick Remender a lot. This is very not, I don't know, high school drama.
Uh-huh.
Kind of would not. It's not what I would expect from him. But this is really wonderful. I really like it, and it's clearly going into really dark places.
Yeah, I think I could do without, like, this guy with no face, like, fucking goats, and this guy, like, God, this guy masturbating to a dog show? What? I can live without that. You know,
sure?
Everything sandwiched between those two parts is gravy. I don't know that I need something that that sticky grizzly. That's just nasty. I want to see some options.
I hate you.
Good.
I'm a buy. This is a solid buy for me. I'm reading. This is. I'm picking this up every time.
It is truly fascinating. I would certainly recommend it. So yes, I'm a buy.
Double buy. Double buy. Deadly class number two. Double buy.
Welcome to the double buy of tomorrow.
Exactly.
I do what I can.
Notable other releases of the week. Rat Queens 5 came out. It's wonderful. Pick it up. Black Science 4 came out. Also wonderful. Larfleas. Savor that Larfleas. I don't think it's long for this world.
I'll have to pick up all of these.
Yeah. And Hawkeye came out. I did not read Hawkeye. I wait for trades on Hawkeye. I assume it's amazing.
It's not likely Hawkeye's going to get canceled.
No, Hawkeye's not going to get canceled. Hawkeye's going to probably run until Matt Fraction is tired of writing it.
Totes.
Yeah. So all those are what else? Anything else I'm forgetting? No, I think that's it. And then for trades of the week, Invincible Volume 19. Dear Lord, that book, that the Kirkman just keeps going.
He just can't stop.
No. Peter Panzerfaust Volume 3. Spear of Foes of Spider-Man Volume 1.
That's very exciting.
I'm picking that up. Everyone should buy it because that's also rumored to be canceled.
That sucks.
Which would bum the shit out of me because that's like one of my favorite books right now.
Yeah, it is great. It is a solid book.
The original X-Force as a Black Ops team is being released by Craig Kyle and Chris Yost. First volume of it in trade, so... it's pretty solid, actually.
When was it from?
That's that was before Uncanny X-Force by Rick Remender. Is like that. This is there. It went through two iterations of this series, and then Uncanny X-Force with Remender. So that it was like 2005, 2006. It started, I think.
Hmm.
Started in there somewhere. The Uncanny Avengers Volume 1 trade is being released.
Mm-hmm.
Thor by Walt Simonson Volume 4. I'm going to eventually be... I really wish they just released a giant omnibus for that, because Walter Simonson is a wonderful, wonderful creator. And Archer and Armstrong, Volume 4, Valiant, doing good work for that book as well, with Greg Pak.
You've been keeping up with Archer and Armstrong at all?
Here and there.
Hmm.
Kind of. It's very similar to his Hercules book that he did in late 2000s.
Right.
For Marvel. That's it for weekly floppies. Handsome Minds, put your glasses on. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club.
Some of us never take them off.
That's true.
I do.
I don't.
I'm not part of that.
I take them off when I sleep.
I'm not part of that array.
But that is it. This week for Book Club, we are reading Planetary Board, Warren Ellis and John Cassidy. This is a segment where we... read longer form work and give you some notice so you can read with us, engage in our discussion with us. I had just purchased the omnibus for this. It just came out maybe 3 weeks ago.
I didn't have to buy shit because no. Robbie gave me his books.
Yeah, I had the trades already and I don't need them anymore. So now Eric has some.
I do.
But I got the omnibus. I reread it. I was like, we should do this because rereading it made me realize how wonderful it is. I love this book. I love Warren Ellis, and this is my favorite thing from him. And John Cassaday just does spectacular work in this book. He's most famously probably known for Astonishing X-Men with Joss Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just, you know, all him. All just these two guys. And Laura Martin doing colors. She should be mentioned because we already mentioned her name with Rick Remender and Uncanny Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, top class colorist, and her work is really wonderful in this as well. I'm very curious about what you think, Eric.
Well, I hate it.
Oh, it's you the hate worst it?
Thing I've, yes, I hate it, and I hate you. No, this was a hell of a read. It's so very clear. It's almost dumb to bring it up. It's so obvious, the Alan Moore influence that reads
certainly
this reads almost exactly like a Tom Strong story. You know, that it definitely has its own flavor because it's not just like a Tom Strong story. It's not necessarily like an adventure comic. It does have this weird Twilight Zone X-Files sort of strange investigative feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of book, but it's got so many threads similar to other stories, you know, that it's clearly influenced by.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like an ode to.
No, it definitely is, and I'm not even talking about the pulps and the comics.
Right.
I think one of the things that's interesting that they don't seem to touch on enough is the part in there where they create a device that created a whole fictional reality.
Yeah, and then someone escapes.
And someone escapes from it.
Yeah.
When this whole story seems to, the whole reality seems to be within a fictional reality. You wrote me some notes about this, that, you know, how all these characters, this is basically an impossible story using Marvel characters, DC characters, literature characters, pulp characters, and tying them all together.
Yeah.
And it's weird that it's in this meta universe that includes everything.
Yeah.
And is supposed to also be, I don't know, like a real world. It's bizarre.
It's set in the now basically defunct Wildstorm universe. It started off that way, at least. Then DC bought it, and then there was a long lapse, like mm-hmm. a few years, where they didn't publish any stories before it got finished. And it kind of faded away because Wildstorm no longer existed,
mm-hmm.
really. But yeah, it's
like what characters in this were actual Wildstorm characters?
Well, I mean, the whole premise of this is that it's everything kind of taken below the surface
mm-hmm.
of their. I mean, it's superheroed archaeologists. It's these people investigating mysteries from the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not supposed to be overt. It's not, but Jenny Sparks, I mean, they're mentioned. They're never, Jenny Sparks is probably the, she was in The Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And she's probably the most prominent character, but you're not going to get there. It's supposed to be not directly involved. It's just supposed to be kind of the, where it takes place. But then by the end, it doesn't even really matter
mm-hmm.
because it, Wildstorm stopped existing
yeah.
in a proper way. I mean, you mentioned Alan Moore as an influence. Mm. I don't know if you have it anywhere, but this omnibus starts with an introduction by Alan Moore.
Yeah, is it the one where he talks about, so I'm writing this from the 20th century and you're reading it in the 21st?
Yes, exactly.
It's I started to read it, and I'm like, "This is a little wanky, Alan Moore," and I don't know. It felt a little pretentious or something. I'm like, I don't want to read this.
I liked it.
I'm sure it was fine. Alan Moore is.
It's Alan Moore. That's
yeah. He's a good dude. I'll let Alan Moore be Alan Moore.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Alan Moore likes this. Because it's something he would write as well.
Yes, it very clearly is.
It's an exploration about superheroes, and kind of in this they make references to a lot to people born on the first of every century, January 1st of mm-hmm. 1900 or 1800 or 2000, and they're given powers to protect. Like, the universe imbues these people with powers so that they protect life or the earth or wherever or whatever. And Elijah Snow, I guess, is the main protagonist in this, is one of those. He's a century baby. And they kind of broach the subject that all these pulp heroes and heroes from literature are all, you know, century babies.
Mm-hmm.
And they all are powered. Like, you get Tarzan. And a Doc Savage analog.
I think that Tarzan, he was the guy that was, he was wearing the purple, the purple coat at the, at their little clubhouse meeting.
Yeah,
was that the same one?
With the jaguar or cheetah print
yeah.
thing.
I was going to say, it seems like just from that, it made me think that he was also kind of the Phantom, because he doesn't seem to be represented in any other way.
Yeah, they also have, you know, you get the Lone Ranger in a flashback. And
yes.
The Shadow. And
I love how the Shadow is the Lone Ranger's son. That's pretty epic. That's pretty wonderful. God, I love the Shadow so much.
Yeah, and there's like these long lines, descendants of all these superpowered people who are all... The universe has tasked them by giving them powers to... you know, help to mm-hmm. save people. And I think that is what I love most about this is that they get to the point where Elijah Snow, he's like, he saves things. He's mm-hmm. an archaeologist and he wants to save people.
Mm-hmm.
And that to the comic book collecting nerd in me, save really like, ugh.
I can see how that he's not the collector. He's the saver.
Exactly. And he writes those, he writes the
the Overstreet Guide.
Yes. Basically writes.
Magnificent.
Yeah. It really is a kind of, for a lot of this is really flavor of the week. Storytelling, mm-hmm. like they visit Monster Island, and then they go to Hong Kong with the ghost detectives, and then, you know, they visit Tarzan, they visit the multi-dimensional spaceship that's crash landed on Earth.
Mm-hmm. And this was the same way that a lot of the Tom Strong stories were told,
mm-hmm.
and that it would just sort of. He would just find some sort of weird thing in the universe and they would explore it for an issue or two. And then there'd be this huge callback to it that would solve like a huge problem way later in the overall arc. And the storytelling is very similar to that.
Yeah. They eventually tie all these little plot threads
yes,
together.
Exactly. The exact same way that Tom Strong was written.
Yeah. They become overarching villains.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the Four, which there are...
they are the Fantastic Four.
They are the Fantastic Four if they were, you know...
Dicks.
Dicks and kind of weird.
Weird dicks if they were weird dicks.
Weird dicks.
We are dicks? Is that what you said?
No, I did not say we are dicks. I said weird dicks.
Weird dicks.
Weird
you
dicks.
Talk funny.
I talk. I'm not a good talker. but they are the very clear Fantastic Four analog. But they've kind of bargained with this alternate Earth to get powers and have sold out this Earth
mm-hmm.
to do so. And that becomes the main plot where Elijah Snow and Planetary are trying to stop this from happening.
I love it that his mentality is, fuck it, we got all kinds of Earths.
Yes.
We got gazoogles of Earths.
We got so many Earths. It's just one. We'll just go to another one.
Ah.
Yeah, but...
Earths.
Yeah.
That's not that good an Earth.
No. This whole... Even tied throughout all this, there are a lot of very heavy sci-fi elements, Eric, which I thought you would enjoy a lot.
Of course I do.
Yes.
You've got my number, sir.
Yeah. The whole premise of them, that the all the universes are two-dimensional, laid on top of each other in like a giant snowflake, representing the entire prism of the dimensionality.
Yeah, I think you have to be... You have to do one of two things. You have to be very scientifically literate and reread these concepts like a bunch of times and be like, what are they talking about? And really think through it. Or you just like, okay, they're saying weird shit. I'm going to turn the page.
I'm somewhere in the middle. Between
yeah, I started out as one and I'm like, I mean, it's fascinating that he's coming up with these ideas, and I'm trying to go on that journey with him.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of have to shrug it off and be like, yes, you can explain this away. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going.
The thing with the time machine at the end, that's the thing that I just went, I can't wrap my brain around this.
Well, I thought that actually made sense to me, where they talked about how all of time is sort of collapsing into one position.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they said it was. That's why they kept talking about the Schrodinger's cat, that it exists in both positions, both alive and dead. And as you go forward in time, it collapses into one position, and that's what opening the time machine did. Is it would collapse the future into one future. But actually what ended up happening was it created many futures.
Yes, where
they all came back and said hello. And they all wanted to fuck with them too.
Yes, well,
that's what's great.
It makes sense, honestly, with these characters. The planetary is made up primarily Elijah Snow, Jaquita Wagner, the drummer. Do you think they got enough? I really enjoy this kind of the weird powers structure, mm-hmm. and the way that they made, you know, the female lead. She's the powerhouse.
I really like her.
Yeah.
Like I thought, like, when she was first introduced, I'm like, this is going to be really stupid and hokey, but she's very likable.
Yeah.
I enjoy her character quite a lot. And I like how, at the end, she's literally complaining because she can't punch things. She's like, damn it, I'm so useless. This is stupid.
Yeah, her main impetus for anything is, I don't want to be bored.
Mm.
Like her father, Tarzan.
Yes. Yes, her father, Tarzan. That's a good sentence.
I love the issue where they encounter Superman and the Green Lantern, and they kill, and Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. and they just kill them before they even.
Did Wonder Woman die? I think I missed that.
Well, it happens off panel.
I don't remember seeing it.
Well, that's the thing, you don't
even off panel.
Well, that's, they go, we should shoot her down before she even gets here. That'll teach her a lesson.
Hmm.
They say that, you know, and you don't see anything about it.
I was shocked when they did the Superman bit,
and he just
lights the baby on fire.
Yes.
Like, that's effing intense.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to kill it? Oh, man. All right. Well, it's too late. I already fried it to death.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I think, actually, of all these three main characters, I the drummer's powers are kind of the most interesting.
I think they are really fascinating. I kind of wish that they had done more
to
delve into that.
Yeah, because you see it like near the end of it.
Yes,
you like see it through his eyes where he's looking at coffee, and he yes. can see all the data about it.
Yes,
and I agree that they should have. I think shown yes. that to it really better gives you an understanding of how he sees things.
No, I think as a. As a huge computer nerd, the idea of someone that is a technopath on that level,
mm-hmm.
like, that's really, truly fascinating. Like, there was, I'm sure, like, Heroes was in the news recently.
Yeah.
So which,
rebooting it.
Yes. Did you ever watch any of it?
I did not.
The first season is very, very good, and the second and third season, each season is half as good as the season before. Although I think season three is maybe one tenth of how good season two was. but there was a character who was some kind of weird technopath, except she could, like, a bunch of stuff that didn't make sense. Like, she was running an IM client in her brain, which, that's retarded. That would never work. but I don't know. He is really fascinating. I really wish that he had been. They start off with him setting him up as this really annoying, stupid character. Mm-hmm. He's always in the background. It's always like, oh, go hack stuff.
Right.
Well, he hacked this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's asinine. I don't know. There's so many fascinating things. The guy is basically a living computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with like weird telekinetic like powers to control machines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fascinating, and you could do so many things with it. And he pretty much just lets it ride. It's kind of like he just didn't want to explore it, I think.
I think it's just the, like, of all the stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find. I don't know.
No, I know. I mean, he clearly had this plot blocked out, and there just wasn't more room for it. And, you know, looking at it that way, I can applaud him for that, because there is a lot to be said for putting the right amount in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't feel as big as it is. It doesn't feel too overblown.
No,
do you know what I mean?
It's very tight.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Nothing feels wasted. There's no extra, like, I don't need this issue.
Yeah.
Next, going to ask you about the art.
You know, I definitely think John Cassaday is very talented.
Mm-hmm.
There's some weird bits in this, you know, particularly later on when he starts to get more of his Astonishing X-Men look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's clear he's developing some.
Yeah.
But it seems like when he falls into that look, like, it feels like there's a lot of heavy reference use, almost to the point of it looks like traced photographs. Like when he introduces that little Al Roker character in the episode where they
strand
they trap Ben Grimm in outer space.
They trap Ben Grimm, yeah.
Yeah, whatever his name is. Sanford Green. Was that? It wasn't Sanford Green. Sanford Green's a comic book artist. What was the guy's name? It was Green,
it's
wasn't
something
it?
Something Green, yes.
Something. Well, Sanford Green, you're going to be trapped in outer space. You can draw stuff in outer space now. That will make you cooler.
Does it now?
Literally, outer space is cold.
That's, oh, I see what you did there.
Yep.
Jacob Green.
Jacob Green, that's correct.
I'm in that issue.
Just the faces and the shadows, it becomes more photorealistic, and it doesn't seem like these are, yeah, the guy that looks just like Al Roker. Like, there are two...
Heavy Al Roker. Not thin. Yeah, he's not thin Al Roker.
He's kind of like middleweight.
That's true.
Al Roker. But there are, like, two pictures of him on the two-page spread. They're facing opposite directions. It's very clear it's using the same reference.
I see it.
Those faces are identical. They're used the exact same reference. Just flipped and drawn again. I don't have a problem with using references. A lot of people do have problems with tracing. I particularly do not, because, you know, you're an illustrator and you've got to work under time constraints. You've got to get things done. But I just feel like I'm seeing a little too much of the brushstrokes here. I'm seeing a lot of the same tricks applied over and over. I like Cassaday. I think he's very talented. Some of this just gets stuck in my craw is all.
In your craw?
My craw. Yes, that's how I'd put it.
Okay.
I do. It's the parts where he's relying less on that sort of crutch of using heavy reference. And he's doing more things like these collection trade covers,
mm-hmm.
where he's really taking his time and designing what's going on, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he's thinking about this shape here and that shape there and these shadows and and then there's these rays and these lightning bolts, and there's, you know, that is what's exciting to me about his work. These covers, these conceptual covers he's come up with, that's some heavyweight stuff. Very clever ideas, good, solid thinking, you know, in terms of coming up with a strong illustrative concept. But I think that he's almost kind of wasted in trying to tell this story in this this photorealistic way. You know, as nice as it looks, I think he's better off drawing the background material, designing nice panels. I think that it's almost a distraction, the photorealistic faces. Does that make sense?
I understand where you're going. I don't really, as a, you know, not an artist, mm-hmm. I don't really notice any of that.
Well, I imagine you wouldn't, which is...
Like, I did not one time go, oh, that looks like that. You know, it doesn't...
No, I don't think anyone would, that doesn't have a background in illustration. And I think even I'm being a little harsh, but I am more drawn to the stuff that it's clear he's shooting from the hip. He's coming up with, you know, his own interesting ideas, and it's not quite so heavily, you know, photo reference. Because that gets just a little monotonous. But that was definitely the look that they rolled into Astonishing X-Men and all that. You know, no, absolutely.
You're Sherlock Holmes.
The thing that bugged me is that there was no John Carter of Mars in this.
Well, they had an Edgar Rice Burroughs character already, so that maybe.
I guess that's true. That's Tarzan?
Yeah.
I honestly think they should have done, but I mean, I don't know how he would fit it in. But I mean, there's space travel in this, so it seems like they could have slid it in there somehow. I don't know.
One of those guys that got shot into space in a giant bullet in the 1800s.
Totally. That would have been the perfect time to do it.
Maybe one of them is, and we just didn't. It's just not in the story. You're supposed to. I don't know.
It is frustrating. Did it bother you how Chiquita seemed? She just looked like a white woman through most of this book. And I don't think, like, that really kind of bugs me. It's like they didn't realize it until that happened, and then they tried to... They tried to give her the right skin tone.
I don't know, there's or, certain page. It's very kind of...
There are pages where she looks...
Darker skinned than other
pages. Well, there's plenty where she looks paler than I am.
Yes, there. It's not necessarily consistent.
No, it's.
But there are also
not.
Pages where I mean, like I'm looking at one right now where it's before that reveal that you mm-hmm. know she's the child, and you know she looks like you know a biracial woman.
Well, I would have just thought Hispanic or something.
Well, I think that's. I think.
Or maybe.
Well, I think
maybe,
that's what you're supposed maybe, to think. I don't.
Right.
Obviously, that's kind of you don't the until that reveal you have no idea about her background for the most part, other than you
yes.
know, she's kind of been adopted. So I think, I mean, that was my first thought when I, you know, until I got to the reveal where, you know, she's an African, like scientist's and Tarzan's daughter.
Yes. Yes.
Until that point, you just go, oh, she's, you don't really know, but you know, she had, her name's Chiquita.
Mm-hmm.
You think, oh, maybe Hispanic, you know, that's kind of a mystery. And that may be part of it. I'm not so sure.
I just think that,
and I met, you know, I biracial.
She's the only person of color in the book, and they make her white.
Well, Ambrose Chase, he gets.
Yeah, I guess that's right, but he's dead through most of
he
it.
He is dead through most
because
of
it's science fiction, and the black guy has to die immediately, and then be resurrected through time travel naturally.
Yeah, I think that's... Well, I mean, there's the Asian characters and kind mm-hmm. of the backstory. And I think, I mean, it comes with that kind of... It's, I've already said, you know, we've discussed all the references to pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of all these famous characters, a lot of them are just, I mean, they're white people from.
Oh, it's true.
From, I mean, it's.
Yeah, I'm, this is all this there is was. This is definitely not me trying to call Warren Ellis a racist. I just think that it's a little mishandled. It makes me think of, and it's a hard thing to do. You know, there's a whole process of, you know, writing to art, to color, to printing, where any of this shit can go wrong. And if a skin tone needs to be within a range,
mm-hmm.
it can be a real problem. It makes me think of, I bought some Sandman Mystery Theaters,
mm-hmm.
Which are supposed to be very good. The ones that I read, they were very good. They were competent. But there were a couple in particular. They were drawn by a Sandman artist that I can't think of his name now. He did one of the Clerkland stories. But he drew... They were like fighting the Chinese triads or something. And there were just loads of Asian characters. Well, they were meant to have like a slightly browner, slightly yellower skin tone. But somewhere along the way in the process, they looked like Simpsons characters.
Jesus.
And at no point was that intentional. You know, that was just the printer probably just like, whatever, I've got to roll this out, and not knowing really what his tolerance was. Like, it's really hard to communicate specific color.
Right.
And it's kind of a similar situation. Like, I remember reading the individual issues of that Sandman Mystery Theater and being like, oh, that's a little racist. And following up on it at some point, whether it was in the letters section or in a collection that I picked up or whether I Googled it or something, but them talking about, yeah, it was kind of just a printing error in this and this, and people really didn't like it.
No kidding.
But it's kind of the same thing that, I don't know, but this just feels like kind of a miscommunication,
yeah,
that the people involved in making the art did not know what she was supposed to be until it was too late. But whatever.
I was going to also ask you if you like the Shazam / Meta Baron multidimensional hopping spaceship captain.
You thought he was a Meta Baron?
He kind of, that suit made me think of it. That metal kind
of. I just thought of Shazam, but he is a fucking boss. I love him.
Yeah.
He's awesome. There are a lot of crazy ass ideas in this that I adore.
That Thor's hammer is held in a dimension of a yes. world that is just only used for weapons.
A whole world that they cleared off to put weapons in it.
It's a storage locker filled with corpses.
Yes, it's pretty fascinating. No, there's so many fun ideas. No, that Shazam guy is a boss. I really like his costume designs,
mm-hmm.
although they all seem... They're all kind of like the Art Nouveau versions of everything.
Yes.
Which is fine. I like that this world has that sort of flair to it. It's fun. It's exciting. But he manages to pull off, like I'm flipping through book one now.
Mm-hmm.
I went from that to the part where it's dipping into the pulp heroes.
Mm-hmm.
He gets into that pretty well, too. Like it's nice that he can go in and out of that.
Did you catch Morpheus and Death?
I did.
Sitting on a park bench?
I did catch that.
I love this book.
I think it is well worth loving. This is one of the best books we've read in quite some time. And I mean, and that's putting it up against some... the height of talent. You know, I would put this over the Fantastic Four, or I'd put it up beside something like King City. I mean, it is good. It is good material.
Yeah, it's...
It is good times.
My favorite thing from my favorite writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know Warren Ellis was your favorite. That's good to know.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say all the time, you know, this is my favorite.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain, yeah. I mean, if you look at his body of work...
Yes.
It's very, very good, and it's hard for me to say someone else I like more than that. All consistently, everything he writes, I enjoy.
I can hardly disagree. This work, very, very good.
Yeah.
As strong as anything we've read.
Yeah. It's Planetary. It just came out in a giant omnibus. It's also available in for trades. If you want to hunt those down, I think they're out of print. Because they just pushed they want to be able to buy the giant omnibus. It's worth it. You can get Amazon for like $60.
Is there any bonus art in the omnibus?
Oh yeah, there's tons of stuff in the back. There's full scripts, fantastic. Full scripts and concept scribble pencils. You know,
I imagine those full scripts are not as retarded as the Frank Miller script.
Full shot, Jim. I want to see your ass.
She's got one fine ass.
No. They're like a real person wrote them, not a...
Yes.
Not someone from Sin City decided to write a comic book.
Jesus.
But that's really interesting. You got to see John Cassaday's sketches and preliminary designs for a lot of stuff. Also really interesting. There's several one-shots, including one where Planetary crosses over with Batman, which is interesting, not really necessary to read, and not nearly as good, honestly, as the... But it has Batman in it. If you want to see Elijah Snow talk to Batman.
I mean, why wouldn't you?
I don't know. But that's in there, too. You can also get that as a trade separately if you can hunt it down.
Are there any plans to do more of these?
No, I think it's open and shut.
Heartbroken.
I don't...
This could go on forever, and I would keep reading it.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, Warren Ellis, he's...
I know. He's going to move on to the next thing. He's got too much crazy shit in his head, apparently.
He's writing the Moon Knight series, which comes out this month for Marvel, and then he's going to be writing two creator-owned books, I believe, comic books. Which he's not been really in comics a lot the past 5 years or so.
He kind of pulled a game in there.
He started writing books. I'm excited to see him back in comics because he's...
His triumphant return.
Yeah. Okay, folks. We are doing a duo of books by Branham Graham next week. We are doing Prophet, Volume 1, 2, and 3. 3 has just recently been released. And we're also going to read his Complete Multiple Warheads and kind of compare and contrast, get a couple, you know, discuss the themes and how things are executed differently in both. They're by the same creator, and yet they're kind of very different books. I hope you pick them up, read with us, please. So, folks, with that, we will call it a day. One day.
That is un day.
Uno. But anyway, folks, this is episode 42. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us on handsomeboyscomicshour.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Please email us suggestions, advice, criticisms, hate mail, love mail.
Particularly hate mail.
Cookies. Mail us cookies. I like...
Okay, totally.
I like oatmeal cookies.
I don't eat cookies.
So, double cookies for me. Double cookies!
Magnificent.
You can also find us at Twitter at HBC Hour, on Facebook, Facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. Like us there, see us in your feed, etc., etc. You can also find us on Tumblr, HandsomeBoysComicsHour.tumblr.com. You can also find me on Tumblr at Mixmaster Serial. It's MIXMASTERCEREAL. I'm also on Twitter at the same name, Mixmaster Serial. Eric, where can they find you or your things online?
My things. Yep. You can look at my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see most of the things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
How? Where was London?
Yes. Yeah. Those wolves.
Wolves of London.
They'll rip your lungs out, Jim.
They will. So, folks, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Ah-woo.
Ah-woo.
Where?